America, your trusted source of information.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Political experts say President Trump is likely to keep up the attacks on four young House Democrats, all women of color, and his campaign for re-election. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
Tufts University political analyst Jeffrey Berry says President Trump has calculated his re-election relies on his most ardent supporters.
His chance of being re-elected is to get a super turnout from his base.
Berry fully expects Trump to expand his use of divisive rhetoric during the campaign. Northwestern University political science professor Alvin Tillery says if Trump wins, the GOP could have serious problems in future elections.
How long will that playbook work as millennials and Gen Z voters enter their political maturity and begin to vote against Republicans? Because those segments have deep dislike for the Republican Party.
I'm Tim McGuire.
U.S. defense officials confirmed the transfer back to the United States an American suspected of fighting with the Islamic State terror group in Syria. He's expected to be charged and tried for terrorism-related charges and crimes. According to a Pentagon statement, the suspect was previously held by Syrian Democratic Forces as a suspected member of ISIS, but referred other questions to the Justice Department. Justice Department officials said they were aware of the transfer first reported by CNN. The top U.S. Homeland Security official defended his agency's treatment of detained migrants and unaccompanied children on the U.S.-Mexico border during a hearing Thursday on Capitol Hill. Acting Secretary Kevin McClellan fielded questions from members of the House Oversight and Reform Committee about unhygienic conditions, prolonged detentions, agents' impropriety, and how DHS handled an increase in people, largely families and children, crossing into the U.S. without authorization. This is VOA News. According to President Trump, a U.S. Navy vessel in the Strait of Hormuz has shot down an Iranian drone. That's, again, according to the president. VOA's Steve Herman has details.
President Trump says the USS Boxer, a Navy amphibious assault ship, took defensive action on Thursday against an Iranian drone that came within about 1,000 meters of the vessel, threatening it and its crew. After the Iranians ignored multiple warnings, according to Trump,
the drone was immediately destroyed. This is the latest of many provocative and hostile actions by Iran against vessels operating in international waters.
Trump called on other nations to protect their ships as they go through the strait and work in the future with the United States on maritime security in the region. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Meanwhile, Iranian state television said Thursday forces from the country's Revolutionary Guard seized a foreign tanker accused of smuggling oil. The report said the vessel was intercepted Sunday in a section of the Strait of Hormuz with 12 crew members on board. It said the tanker was involved in smuggling 1 million liters of fuel but did not give details. A U.S. State Department spokesperson has said the U.S. strongly condemns what it calls the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy's continued harassment of vessels and interference with safe passage in and around the Strait of Hormuz. A 29-year-old former University of Illinois student will spend the rest of his life in prison for kidnapping and murdering a visiting Chinese scholar in 2017. When the jury deadlocked on whether Brent Christensen should get the death penalty, the federal judge automatically sentenced him to life in prison with no chance of parole. Christensen kidnapped and murdered the student by beating her with a bat and cutting off her head. Her body has never been found. Her parents came from China to Illinois for the trial. They pleaded with Christensen to reveal where he put her body. The acting head of U.S. Customs and Border Protection says the Trump administration's new policy banning entry to most asylum seekers who arrive at the southern border is being rolled out as a pilot program. AP's Jackie Quinn.
This policy is the biggest change to how the U.S. handles asylum seekers, denying protection to most migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border. They'll be deemed not eligible for asylum if they cross through another country on their way to the U.S. Mark Morgan, the acting head of Customs and Border Protection, told NPR this policy is being rolled out, starting with a pilot program in the Rio Grande Valley, instead of all along the southwest border. Morgan also says he expects it won't survive a court challenge.
That's AP's Jackie Quinn. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, July 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There were demonstrations yesterday throughout the Democratic Republic of Congo.
The young of Lucha, they protest against the candidature of Mr. Alexis Thambwe-Mwamba, who ran for office to be a speaker of Senate, as Kabila proposed him.
That's Eve Bazaiba, a member of the opposition Lamuka coalition in the DRC, living and dying in the battle for Libya's capital. Activists decry Botswana's appeal against legalizing gay sex. Sierra Leone's anti-corruption commission presents two repossessed government vehicles. And the UN says Zimbabwe's food situation is moving from a crisis to an emergency.
Unfortunately, we're moving from crisis to emergency, which is pretty serious. Also, the economic challenges facing the country.
That's the coordinator of UN agencies in Zimbabwe, and South Africa mourns the death of genre blending singer John Clegg, also known as the White Zulu. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. There were demonstrations throughout the Democratic Republic of Congo yesterday, Thursday, in the capital Kinshasa. Protesters belonging to the nonpartisan youth movement known as Luka marched against the nomination of former Justice Minister Alexis Thambwe-Mwamba as Speaker of the Senate. Mwamba had been chosen by former President Joseph Kabila's coalition. Demonstrators also took to the streets in the eastern city of Goma to protest against insecurity after two people were killed this week following a failed kidnapping attempt. Eve Bazaiba is a member of the Lamuka Coalition. She said the protesters in Kinshasa were against Mwamba's nomination because of his anti-democratic posture as Minister of Justice.
Since yesterday and today, the young of Lucha, they protest against the candidature of Mr. Alexis Thambwe-Mwamba, who ran for office to be a Speaker of Senate, as Kabila proposed him to be a Speaker of Senate. The young of Lucha say that he can't never be a Speaker of Senate regarding the bad thing done by Mr. Thambwe-Mwamba. When we have the war in the east of country, he shoots the fly, and also here in Kinshasa, when he was the Minister of Justice, he was one of give so many problems to the electoral process. That's why they can't allow him to be a Speaker of Senate.
So the former President Kabila's party, that is the party that's supposed to pick the Speaker of the Senate. Is that correct?
Yes, as they did for the Chamber of Representatives, the Speaker is also one of the members of Kabila's party.
So do you think his name will be withdrawn?
I think that the young are in the right way because it's not good to have the one like Alexis Thambwe-Mwamba as a speaker.
It's been a long time now since President Felix Tshisekedi won the election. The formation of the government is not complete.
Not yet. Until now, they didn't have a common ground. They didn't have an agreement regarding have a government. We hope that it will be possible next month or something like this. But I don't think so. Regarding the deal they did between FCC and CASH, the network of Mr. Felix Tshisekedi, they can't have an agreement. As you know, Tshisekedi didn't want, and Kabila did the effort to give Tshisekedi a power, but it was an agreement to people don't know how and when they did it, and until now we're still fighting to have the truth of election.
If we understand there was another protest in some part of the country where someone was beheaded, what do you know about that?
Yes, the protest is also in the Sankuru region. The Sankuru region, we have another one member of FCC, the network of Kabila, the former president. People don't agree him to be a governor. He's also the same like here in Senate. And you can also have this problem also in the east of country regarding the rebels who are there. There are so many problems in Congo now.
President Felix Tshisekedi, what is he saying about all these protests?
He can't say anything because it's depending to Mr. Kabila. Everything is the hand of Mr. Kabila. It's Kabila who's leading the country on behalf of Tshisekedi. He's still waiting the agreement with Kabila. Every time he going there to the farm of Kabila to negotiate with him.
Thank you very much again, Eve.
Okay, you are welcome.
Eve Bazaiba is a member of the opposition Lamuka Coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo. She was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. As Libya's two rival governments fight for control of the capital, Tripoli, airstrikes and artillery fire continue to batter the city. Nearly 1,100 people have died and more than 100,000 displaced by the war. As viewers Heather Murdoch reports from Tripoli, officials say if the fighting continues, the country will be headed towards disaster.
Ali Fatih El-Faghi voiced alarm as his car approached a tank, billowing metallic-smelling smoke. An airstrike had just hit the tank, and Ali was scared that his brother, Abdul Wahab, was inside. Ali and his fellow soldier, Mohammed Bashir, raced to a nearby field hospital where the soldiers from the tank were taken. For Ali, there was a moment of relief. Abdul Wahab was not in the tank when it was hit. This is Hussein Ben Ataya, the mayor of Tejoura, the Tripoli suburb where an airstrike recently hit a migrant detention center, killing dozens of people. He says there is almost no outside support for displaced families in Tripoli, and any expansion of the war would spark a humanitarian disaster. The fighting began in early April when Khalifa Haftar, the de facto leader of Libya's eastern government, declared his plan to take Tripoli by force. The capital is currently controlled by Libya's western government, which is internationally recognized. On this side of the front line, soldiers say the war is for Libya's future. If Haftar wins Tripoli, they say, Libya will revert to the days of Muammar Gaddafi and his four-decade-long dictatorship. Haftar says he is fighting terrorism and continues to declare that victory over Tripoli's forces is imminent. Mohamed Jalal is an operations commander for the Tripoli forces. Jalal says although the international community recognizes the government in Tripoli, military support for his forces is weak as his men exchange fire with Haftar's forces. Neither side can be said to have the obvious upper hand as daily battles rage in Tripoli's suburbs. Less than an hour after finding the burning tank, Ali and Mohammed drove off in their armored car, relieved that Abdul Wahab was okay. Mohammed says Ali then got in another vehicle to tow the burning tank off the road. He says that moments later, another airstrike hit Ali directly and ended his life. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Tripoli.
Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission on Thursday handed over two government vehicles to the country's transport minister. Margaret Murray, public relations officer of the commission, says the vehicles were repossessed from two former government officials, one of whom is under investigation by the Anti-Corruption Commission for misappropriation of public funds.
We had actually repossessed two vehicles, one of which is the one we handed over to the Minister of Transport and Aviation, Honorable Cabinet Kalong, with registration number ANS-219. So this is just part of some of our approaches that we use at the ACC, but it has not been used before, the non-conviction-based asset recovery.
Margaret, the way I understand it, these two individuals were working with the government. So how did you come to repossess?
Because of the change of government, obviously, as we all know, other people were appointed in their position. Because they were in that position, obviously, they had access to government vehicles. Normally, when you're no longer a minister or a commissioner, you're supposed to hand over all documents and all properties that have been in your possession to the next person who's taken over from you. But then two of these individuals, Hajiakale Kamara and Olematu Saise, they refused to hand over these vehicles. Madame Khadijatu Olematu Saise actually sold her vehicle. And through our intelligence, we found that the vehicle was in Guinea. And also Hajiakale Kamara, we found out that she had actually put her vehicle in the possession of somebody in his compound. But then through our intelligence, we found out that these vehicles are actually not in their possessions anymore. And then we found out where the vehicles are. And we made it known to the general public that we had repossessed both these vehicles. But then we needed to do proper due process before we send them back into the system through the Transport and Aviation Ministry.
This sounds like something that can happen anywhere in any government.
It is. It can happen anywhere because people use the opportunity when there is a change of government. So this is one of the opportunities that these two former government officials used. But then because of the zeal and zest and because of the high intelligence of the commissioner right now, Francis Ben Kaifala, he made sure that former government officials are supposed to hand over all government properties, all government documents by the time they're leaving office. And if you don't do that, he makes sure that he goes after those people. And these two people are just two of those government officials that we've gone after.
Margaret, thank you very much again for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you for having me.
Margaret Morris, Public Relations Officer of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. She is speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 19th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The United Nations says Zimbabwe's food situation is moving from a crisis to an emergency. It says a majority of the population is food insecure because of drought and ongoing economic meltdown. Columbus Mavunga has more from a poor township just outside the capital, Harare.
The impoverished town of Epworth, less than an hour drive southeast of Harare, is one of the places in Zimbabwe in desperate need of food aid. 48-year-old Placidus Shibura says she's struggling to look after her grandchildren because of the harsh economic conditions in Zimbabwe. She says, "We have resorted to just one meal a day, and at times it's just the vegetables we get in our garden. We are struggling to get money to buy food. I wish donors would bring us food, especially for the children, as I'm not employed. Even school fees I can't pay. One of the children was not well, so medical bills are coming." According to a recent report by UN aid agencies and the government, Zimbabwe needs about $218 million to stave off hunger about 5.5 million people between now and April 2020, when the next harvest is expected, thus assuming there will be enough rains. Bishop Parajuli, the coordinator of UN agencies in Zimbabwe, is urging farmers to invest in irrigation and small grains as part of efforts to reduce the effects of climate. The World Body says Zimbabwe is among several Southern African nations hit by extreme weather in the 2018-2019 growing season. The drought has devastated crops, especially corn, which is used to make the staple food sadza, a thick porridge that is served with relish. In addition, Cyclone Idai in March destroyed many crops a few weeks before harvest time.
Unfortunately, we're moving from crisis to emergency, which is pretty serious. Also, the economic challenges facing the country. People have lost their income, and the situation is really precarious.
The drought has also affected the water supply. Michael Chideme, the spokesman for Harare, says two of the capital's reservoirs have dried out and others are following suit. Water rationing has begun. Parajuli says Zimbabwe is hoping and depending on the generosity of international community. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Botswana's government is to appeal a high court judgment which overturned colonial-era laws against homosexuality, the first the decriminalization of homosexual relations through the courts in Africa. Botswana's conservative and religious communities have welcomed the possible repeal of the ruling, while the gay community and the rights groups have decried the appeal as a step backward. Kundisi Dube reports from Habaroni.
Botswana's gay community and rights activists celebrated on June 11 when the High Court became the first in Africa to overturn colonial-era laws against gay sex. But the victory could be short-lived as Botswana's Attorney General is appealing the ruling. Botswana musician Mutsa Ferestole is one of the country's few openly gay public figures.
My heart was saddened by that. I felt mortified by it because we were moving forward. We were making progress, and now it's like we're two steps back.
Botswana's conservative and religious communities, however, have welcomed the government's move against legalizing gay sex, which they deem immoral.
This is the challenge. It's not normal, and that is not how God wanted or intended human beings to be like. And therefore, now I'm very happy that the state has actually risen up to say, no, this has been an error.
The appeal will look at upholding Botswana's Penal Code Sections 164 and 165, which are similar to anti-gay laws in other former British colonies, and jails those found guilty for up to 7 years. While rarely enforced, rights groups say the laws promote shaming and discrimination against gay people. The Botswana Network on Ethics, Law and HIV/AIDS, Bonela, says it to be a blow to gay rights if the High Court's overturning the laws is repealed.
It's really, really disappointing in the sense that to members of the LGBTI community, it basically means that government affirms the institutionalized stigma that is really based on policies and laws that basically discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation.
Meanwhile, for gay communities in Botswana and across Africa, the High Court's decision remains a beacon of hope for gay rights.
It means so much for the LGBTQ community because now we can be free to love who we love. We can be free to express ourselves. We can be free in the workplace. We can be free as human beings.
While a date for hearing the case is yet to be set, international attention will be on Botswana's Court of Appeal as it reviews the landmark judgment. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni.
South African musician Johnny Clegg, who was one of the loudest voices in pop during the anti-apartheid movement in the 1980s, has died at age 66 after a battle with pancreatic cancer. The so-called White Zulu, so named for his use of indigenous South African music and dance, is being mourned in South Africa. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Sipho Mnunu was just 17 when he met the young man who would change his life and South Africa's music scene.
That was one of the songs, right? So he did like it very much. So that was the song I've been teaching him with.
Johnny Clegg was no ordinary singer, and Mnunu says, no ordinary South African. During apartheid's darkest days, the young white man challenged norms and the law by crossing the color line and starting a band, Jaluka, with Mnunu. They became known for their inventive use of Zulu songs and dance. Clegg died this week at 66 after a battle with pancreatic cancer, but his legacy, fans say, lives on. Music fan Philip Brook.
You can compare it to any international performance. For instance, Queen was a true performer, you know, a true artist. So was Johnny Clegg. He captured the imagination of the people. He told a beautiful story.
Taught Clegg how to dance and stick fight like a Zulu man, and was by Clegg's side as they rocketed to stardom with hits like Asimbonanga and Impi, a song so controversial it was banned by the apartheid regime. But Mnunu says he too learned from the man he said was more than a brother.
I never been to the school. I can't read and write. So he made me understand the white people, a little bit of the culture, you see, he helped me a lot with that, all those things. I helped him too, but to me, it doesn't look like, I don't feel like when the people are saying, oh, you teach him a lot, I said, he teach me a lot also. So in Zulu, we call that Izandla Ziyagezana, the hands, he wash his knowledge.
Down the road in the hip Johannesburg suburb of Melville, street guard Konose Kula says he will forever carry Clegg's music in his heart.
Johnny Clegg was the best. He was a super musician, yeah? He was a legend.
Kula, too, is a musician and plays the guitar and the piano. And he says, the legend himself may be gone, but the white Zulu's music will never die. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Cairo, where the finals of the 2019 African Cup of Nations will go down tonight at the Cairo International Stadium. After 51 matches, the Lions of Teranga of Senegal were squared out with the Desert Foxes of Algeria. Algeria have recorded only a draw in 6 games at the African Cup of Nations. The Fennec are in a race to go unbeaten in the competition, but that will mean having to beat Group B neighbors, Senegal. Algeria, like Egypt and Morocco, ended the group phases without conceding a goal, and with maximum 9 points, they also beat Kenya and Tanzania by 2 and 3 goals respectively. Riyad Mahrez, Algeria's Manchester City player, will be the star to watch from the Algerian side. For Senegal, Senegal's Teranga Lions have shown a steely character since their loss on match day 2 to Algeria. Aliou Cissé's charges have used a lone goal victory in all 3 matches in the knockout rounds, beating Uganda, Benin and Tunisia in the round of 16, quarter and semi-finals respectively. The final hurdle is with the July 19th match up against Algeria. The Senegalese will be looking to avoid a second defeat at the hands of the Algerians. Nigeria's former captain Joseph Yobo, Lairi Kingston, who played for Ghana Black Stars, and Teko Modisi all bear their thoughts on tonight's finals between Algeria and Senegal.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a massive game for both sides and for different reasons, because Senegal, outside there, were one of the favorites to win. But take nothing away from this Algerian team. From start to finish, from the beginning of the tournament, they are the most solid team, most compact team in the style that they play as well. Everything, they were very purposeful in everything that they did.
You know, but one thing about the Senegalese, they are going to miss Koulibaly very much, because he's suspended for the final. And then with the Algerians, the attacking force that they have, without Koulibaly, I think they are going to have problems.
In my heart, you know, I want Sadio Mané to win it, merely because he's done well. You know, he's been consistent club level and also national team, and I know that this means a lot to him.
On Wednesday, Nigeria claimed 3rd place in the African Cup of Nations thanks to some calamitous defending from opponents Tunisia in Cairo. Aiming to maintain their perfect record in AFCON 3rd place playoffs, Oduni Gallo scored the only goal as Nigeria beat Tunisia 1-0 in the 3rd place playoff. Alex Iwobi speaks on winning bronze at the tournament.
It's a great achievement considering the quality of the 24 team, so especially as our team is very young. I'm sure we're happy with this medal, but hopefully we can do better in the next African Cup of Nations.
Gareth Rowe is a Super Eagles coach.
And our young team, I think, has a good future. There are still some mistakes. Our goals we conceded were individual mistakes, most of them, which means that working with young players, they will improve.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee it.
African Beats. Hello, sports fans. This is the voice of America's Sonny Young. Please join me Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC for the sunny side of sports. On Fridays, you can also hear my expanded 30-minute edition of the show at 1730 UTC, right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.